We have a lot of snake lore already.
There's
and
a lot of
it.
Snakes in the show.
I say that two dudes firing handguns randomly at each other at a snake. That is my America.
It is
that
the is, most.
I didn't say it was good.
It is the most
dying
shit I've ever heard in real life.
Two dying men being like, "I got a solution." I'm like, "That's 2022, baby."
It's also the Republic. Dad B is arguably the stupider actor here because Dad A is fucked up from the beginning and is just sort of spiraling off the bad decisions. Dad B ostensibly showed up to help. What the fuck, man?
They both go back for seconds. Can you imagine what kind of raw, uncontrolled idiot behavior the American pioneers displayed in the face of wildlife?
There
was somebody who probably got bitten by a bear and the bear was like, sure, the human got the point, and they're probably like, yeah, come out!
Yeah! Oh, now, man! God, I hope snakes can talk to each other. This snake tells the story every day.
Y'all aren't gonna believe this shit. And that's how I lost my... As the snake is making a stub puppet for its little snake children with the end of its tail, and that's how I lost my rattle.
That's how dirt-eating Winslow died in the hills.
I would assume rattlesnakes think of their tails as, like, restrictor plates. Like, you know, and like,
oh, now I'm even more dangerous now.
Safety's off.
Stealth mode.
They shouldn't have let me go outside without my tail.
Stealth mode.
I got to lay here and say the word rattle.
Rattle. Rattle.
The Shutdown Foolcast. You are listening to the internet's only college football podcast. Today is a special day. I am Spencer Hall. I am joined as always by Holly Anderson, Jason Kirk, and Ryan Nanny, and our producer Michael Server. We are going to get right into it. This is a Dad Disasters episode, and to set the tone, to give you a template for the kind of paternal madness we want to describe, share, and celebrate today. Ryan Nanny, start us off with a parenting disaster.
Well, this is not just a college football podcast, but the internet's only college football podcast. And so it seems only appropriate that we regale our listeners with the tale of Jeff Bowden.
Yeah.
Florida State Jeffy. Offensive coordinator. For those who, if you are relatively new to college football, or if you are a listener of a certain youthfulness, you may not be aware that for, like, I don't know, 15, 20 years, Florida State was just an unstoppable machine. Just year in, year out, ungodly good. We're talking a 14-year streak of winning double-digit games, which was very impressive because most of these seasons, they only played 11 games in the regular season. So it's like consistently in, I would say, the top five in the conversation for playing for the national championship. In the first 9 years that they were in the ACC, Florida State only lost two conference games, which is fucking bonkers.
I think I can remember
what
one
two
of
they
them.
Were. Go for it.
Yeah, I think it
I don't
they
know.
Lost, no, I think they lost one game to NC State.
One was
game
the
to
NC.
UVA.
One was the NC State game. For
one
sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
One, that was it.
One was Virginia. So there
yeah.
we go.
Yeah. Which like I don't remember anything, but I remember those because they only lost twice.
Yeah.
Also because they were hilarious.
They were funny.
The offensive coordinator for a lot of this successful streak was one Mark Richt, who turned his success into the Georgia job, which he took at the end of the 2000 season. In his time as offensive coordinator, FSU always averaged at least 30 points a game. These are dumb stats, but sorry, this is old time. There's only dumb stats from this time. And frequently they were averaging like 36, 40 points per game. They were just just ungodly. But in Mark Richt's last game at Florida State, Spencer, do you know this one? What was the last game where he was the play caller for the Noles?
The last game where Mark Richt was the play caller was the 1999 National Championship game against Oklahoma.
I was at this game.
Yes, where in an upset, Oklahoma limited the explosive Florida State offense to how many points?
Dose.
Limited them to points off of safety.
Which is where we get the classic soccer chant, dos a trece.
See.
So I think the football gods knew what was coming here, because this is actually why
they call soccer football.
Yeah, in other places. It was that game.
This is where enters Jeff Bowden. Interestingly, you know, obviously Bobby Bowden has sons all over the game, but his other boys didn't spend a lot of time at Florida State. They would like come in and maybe do a grad year or like a year as a position coach, but Terry and Tommy mostly had their success built other places, not Jeff. Jeff has spent a lot of time under daddy or brother's wings. And so he steps into what is at the time one of the greatest offensive machines in college football. What happens year one? They go 8-4 with two ACC losses in that year alone. They lose to unranked UNC 41-9, where they have 224 yards of offense. They lose to Florida 37-13, where they average 3.4 yards per play. And that loss drops Florida State out of the top 25 for the first time since 1989. But it's 1 year. Maybe it's just a blip. Maybe we're still getting used to things. Nope, 2002. Lose NC State 17-7 with 177 yards of offense. 2003, in a 26-10 loss to his brother Tommy and Clemson, Florida State has 11 rushing yards on 17 attempts and doesn't score a touchdown until there's 2 minutes left in the game. Also,
lest we forget, this is not the Clemson that you know. This is mentality, Eric Clemson. Yes, Tommy Bowden was not great.
This is we have Clemson at home, Clemson.
Tommy Bowden pioneered, for those of us in the early aughts internet era, the sad field goal. The field goal punt from field goal range.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Bowden is the reason I love Bright Eyes.
Wow. I forgot. Sometimes I forget we had a Clemson fan on the call because you're so nice and normal.
Also note, we have multiple overlapping Bowdens here.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. This is also from 2003. This is Chris Rix's stat line from an Orange Bowl loss, the game, not the stadium, to Miami. 6 of 19 for 96 yards, 1 touchdown, and 1 pick. The very next year, they open the season against Miami, again, in South Florida. Again, how many yards of offense? 165. 2.6 yards per play. The only FSU touchdown was a fumble return, and they lost 16-10. In 2004, Florida State will play 5 games where they don't crack 20 points, including the 2013 loss to Florida at home, which ruined what, Spencer?
That ruined... Did they have a home winning streak?
No.
At that point?
This was the night where they were dedicating the field to Jeff Bowden's daddy.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And they lost...
That's why it's Ron Zook Field.
They lost to Ron Zook's Florida team 20-13.
A fired Ron Zook, correct?
Yeah. Correct. We have now covered the first 4 years of Jeff Bowden. He's not done. In 2005, they managed to beat Miami in the opener 10-7, despite only gaining 170 yards of offense and 9 first downs. In November of 2005, Florida State plays 3 games. They score 36 points total, and they go 0-3 against NC State, Clemson, and Florida, only one of whom is ranked at the time. That brings us to the thing you all know and love, the home shutout against Wake Forest. The first time Florida State has been shut out in Bobby Bowden's, to that point, 31 years, all because of his idiot son. We know that it's a shutout, but I went into the box score to look at exactly what happened here in the play-by-play. Here are again, because that's all we do on this program, true facts. One drive in the first half went into Wake Forest territory, and by the half, they were down 20-0. For the rest of the game, Florida State never got past the Wake 46. This is the team passing line. 9 of 28 for 141 yards and 4 picks. This is the team rushing line. 26 yards on 23 attempts. And they didn't convert a third down until the fourth quarter. So all because Bobby Bowden loved Jeff so goddamn much, Florida State goes from absolute offense powerhouse to, in his last three seasons, Jeff Bowden has dragged them down to 25.2, 28.9, and 26.5 points per game in his final three seasons. Now, you may be saying, hey, there's lots of nepotism in college football. Jeff Bowden is not the only unqualified doofus who got a job because his daddy was so-and-so.
That's the thing, though. He's qualified as shit.
Mm-hmm.
In a manner.
He's just bad.
He is bad. Yeah.
He was qualified to be hired.
That's
yeah.
fair.
Yeah.
He certainly lasted long. But you might be saying, like, you know, why are we focusing on Florida State? Is this just the full cast kowtowing to its new Miami overlords? And the answer is yes, absolutely. This is a present to them. I'm throwing up the U right now.
The thing that I love about Jeffy's long and winding tenure is that it has an It Follows quality to it as well, because don't forget, after Bobby was retired, this is apocryphal, but I have it on good authority that on at least one of Terry's subsequent head coaching stops where Jeffy followed him as offensive coordinator, he followed him at the direct behest of Bobby, and that he would do in these games or in these stops is just like, I heard this from so many people that I feel like it can't be anything but true that he never did anything but play Xbox.
Yes.
And I can't hate on that. I can't. That's like the ultimate little brothering, to be paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to just sit on your ass and play Call of Duty, ostensibly with recruits, but sometimes not.
Maybe not. Maybe not. Anquan Boldin was on some of these Florida State teams.
Yeah,
you had Anquan Boldin, and you're only putting up 15 points?
Do you know
damn.
How you keep Anquan Boldin as an offensive coordinator from getting the ball? That's a kind of talent.
My favorite part about the Wake Forest shutout is that Jeff resigned a few days after it. Bobby
again,
still
kids,
didn't want him to go.
This is not the Wake you know now. This is not the dominant Wake Forest of our current age.
Or mm-hmm. whenever you're
oh,
listening
God,
to this.
God, it's still so weird.
A
when
juggernaut.
Perpetual top five Wake is still a thing, certainly. But yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Although, prove to me Sam Hartman was not the quarterback.
Can't do it.
Fair. Show me
can't
with hard facts. It.
It's just been 10 different versions of that guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Riley Skinner mm-hmm. just keeps molting and changing his
name. Oh!
Skinning.
Same guy.
Skinning. Skinning. Thank you. Also, it was only now that I realized this podcast has two Florida fans, a Clemson fan, and is funded by Miami fans. If you thought we talked about the Noles before.
Oh. And buckle I guess up. There, I guess Jason and I are included because we just love crimes. So.
I mean, I was a fan of a rival ACC team in the 1990s, so yep. I'll get in on this.
I mean, Jason, as the Sandman, you fit naturally into this collective.
Yeah, that voice always makes me nervous because I'm like, oh, fuck, what's it supposed to sound like? Because
Jason
I value
is also
consistency.
Our chief channeler of panhandle country music, which I think is important to the Florida State experience.
Yeah.
the fight song. I'm sure they have a non-racist fight song about Daisy Dukes. I'm sure of it.
Mm-hmm. Who's our resident smoker? That automatically makes you closer.
Actually, I just remembered my first girlfriend dumped me because one of the reasons was she didn't think I had a viable career path, whereas her mm-hmm. goal was to go to Florida State to become a meteorologist. So there's a version of my life story where I'm too stupid for Florida State, and I'll show you Florida State.
What grade was this?
This was senior year.
Oh, okay. He ain't bona fide.
It wasn't like fifth grade or anything, and she's like,
okay,
you know,
okay.
got her heart.
No, so, okay, so this was a nearly grown woman who, okay. Okay.
Man, senior year.
Yeah,
year
it worked out. She's an oil exec now, so worked out for her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I bet she has a lot of different thoughts about weather patterns, as it turns out.
Yeah. They're fine.
Actually, weather is fake. There's never been weather.
Yeah.
It's the Earth's getting colder. Yeah, you have to go back to the Ice Age, really, because there's been a lot of them. There's another one any day now. Fracking is pretty good.
Yeah. That's true.
There's a reason it's a permissible cuss.
Fracking's just like when you help a baby fart. That's all it is.
Frack.
The nutrients in oil and gas make all of those babies in Louisiana super huge and good at football.
Nutrients.
Well, yeah, oil is moisture. And we
have you seen the documentary Hulk? Ang Lee's Hulk?
Same thing. Exact same thing. You're welcome.
Now, that's a dad disaster right there. The Incredible Hulk is a dad disaster.
It really is. Oh, my God.
Comic books are littered with dad disasters.
Yeah, that's true.
It's true. There's always a bad dad somewhere in the Marvel universe.
A dad getting killed, a dad's planet blowing up. Like, Thanos is a dad disaster. Like, yeah, endless.
Dad disasters. Thomas Wayne. Actually,
that guy should have kept his head on a swivel for one thing.
Yeah, yeah. Look alive. It's called Look Alive for a reason. You know who's not looking alive? You and Martha. Yeah, scoreboard.
Damn. Wow.
Yeah. See, if the Detroit self-defense guy had been the urban defense guy had been in the Batman universe, over. He would have simply grabbed the wrist, taken the gun out, turned it around. We'd never have Batman.
I think this brings up an important point, though. As soon as we returned the show, the first thing we wanted to do was do one of our beloved disaster episodes. And we asked you guys to submit via a number of mediums. We have our Twitter account at ShutdownFullcast without the T at the end. As a mnemonic device, you may remember that we don't talk about Tennessee football on this show. Or that we all have low testosterone, especially me. You may email us at shutdownfullcast@gmail.com. Or you may call us at 704 Soul Cast. Hail to Ra, the sun god. That's 704 SOLCAST. Thomas Wayne brings up a good point of disastrous dads. We probably should have given you this tip ahead of time, but we've said it before. Let's say it again in this new era. The funniest dad disasters, we promise you, are the shortest ones.
Always.
Or the ones that can be boiled down to one sentence or less. We probably should have mentioned this before. Well, we called for disasters because a lot of you are new. But again, most of these are going to be shorter, and the shorter ones are always funnier or can be boiled down to, here's a couple phrases from my notes, dad hero pontoon keys or RIP grain solo mailbox.
It also helps if you have a like a punchy opening. If you're like, dad had a perfectly good bundle of sparklers. It's like, I'm in.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Let's see where this goes.
We have one coming up where a guy gives his dad H1N1, and that's not the disaster. It just sets the stage for everything else that comes after. Also, by the way, it's not a disaster if you're just being a shitty person.
Yeah.
That one dude from, where was he from? That one Nebraska dude who wrote in who was like, hey, my wife thinks it's a disaster that I got home before she did and couldn't remember if the babysitter said that the baby had eaten or pooped or not. And I just want to, and I, we're kind of listening, and he's like, I just want to let everybody know in case they're thinking about getting married that that's coming down the pike. And I'm like, you certainly sound like a dad disaster in the making.
Hey, this is square one marital counseling. Some people need it.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah,
boy.
True that.
Last thing, two more notes before we get into this. Thank you to everyone who called to inform us that they wore their Garth Hierarchy of Needs shirts to the Garth Brooks tour that is happening right now. I think it just went through Birmingham. We have multiple voicemails about that. We appreciate all of you. Last thing, I know we all have broken business brain. Guys, you don't have to email us to tell us that you texted us a story, or you don't have to tweet at us to tell us that you left a voicemail. We're not moms.
I like it because it is.
I promise we got the emails.
Yeah,
it's very maternal, which I appreciate.
Text me
when you get the email.
Just wanted to circle back and touch base on that text I sent you about my dad shitting himself.
It gives me circling back flinches.
My mom texts me to let me know that she Venmos me, and I'm like, they're on the same. What are you doing?
Well.
Awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, so those are just some pro tips for inclusion. If you can boil your story down to a sentence, that's probably the funniest part. There will be a couple of exceptions in here, but they are notable. Hey, man, let's roll.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Shit. Timeout. Podcast business?
Oh, we'll do a little bit of it. Podcast business. Podcast business. What's that business? Podcast business. The dad business. We're watching dads fail. That's what the theme of the episode today. That's what we're doing.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Woo.
He just gets podcast better business every time. Is where every time.
Every time.
Crisper. More. Cleaner.
There's cleaner. More of it every mm-hmm. time.
Just bigger than before.
Off the top of the dome
bigger
every time.
Bigger than before.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Bang.
I want to go ahead and say that podcast business is where we promote, where you can find and support all of the work that everybody here does.
Explaining the plot.
Listen, very important for those who might be listening for the first time. Holly and I run a newsletter called Channel 6. Channel 6 has a solemn promise that is two things a week for $10 a month. It is wonderful. We have, among other things coming up, a science contribution about butts.
I mean, you
and
tweeted
boxing.
About it. Let's go ahead and tell people what you're researching.
Yeah, I'm researching the physics of knocking someone out by punching them in the ass. That's what I'm doing right now. So
for money. This is where your money is going.
If you want to contribute to this valuable research as well as eventually receive our in-season emails about college football and everything else we write about, that is correct. Channel 6, $10 a month for two things a week.
And working in the less corporeal plane, we also have Jason Kirk.
Yeah, my thing to promote this time around is just my pinned tweet. I have written a novel that is sort of the start of a fictional universe kind of thing. The first one up is a YA coming-of-age thing. Then there's, like, thrillers and horrors and sci-fi type stuff that I would like to get to. I am seeking a literary agent. I tweeted about it. And, you know, likes and replies and that kind of stuff. Pretty helpful in terms of, like, showing that people are interested in spreading the word and so forth. This is probably the only time I will bug you, the podcast reader, about this until any of this is available for purchase. So, yeah, just take a look at my pinned tweet, and I would greatly appreciate it.
I've read the book. Sorry.
It's good.
It is good. I'm just capitalizing on being first. I never get to be first.
I have sent it around to a few people and greatly appreciate those who read it. And there were a lot more people that I wanted to read it. So if you're hearing this and you think, why wasn't it sent to me? Just know that I wanted to. But for various reasons, there are many factors. The algorithm
Certain
did it.
Certain things have happened.
A number of things have taken
place.
Of
things have happened. It's a good book, though. Can't wait for y'all to read it. Buy it, everyone.
Buy it.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you all.
Ryan, you got anything?
Pre-owned airboats.com. It's where we have merch. Haven't put anything new up in a while. Might put some new
stuff. Yes, I am working on a Genghis Khan horse girl shirt.
Yeah, stuff like that. Might put new stuff up. Don't have COVID anymore. And
nice.
This is not podcast business, but I recently learned that there's a U.S. Olympics Hall of Fame. And I just want to say that I think that's unnecessary.
What the fuck?
Like, are there like gold medalists who didn't make the cut?
I think so. Like, wow. Michael Phelps is just going into it this year or something.
What?
And I'm mostly just like, I don't think we need this.
Like, we already have a wiki list of gold medal winners.
Right. The Olympics sort of does all this work for, like, what is this committee talking about? Mm-hmm.
Are there like bronze medalists who are like popular and nice and they get in or something?
The only person I can think of who sort of fits this is the figure skater
Michelle Kwan.
No,
the is
we
it
should
just
have
the
a museum.
Who did Tanya Harding attack?
Nancy Kerrigan.
Nancy Kerrigan is the one person where I'm like, yeah, maybe that.
What about
we could have like a Nancy Kerrigan and Michelle Kwan museum because they both got silver, right?
That would be fine. Sure.
I would like to see admitted the rich person who scammed her way into the snowboarding event.
Yes, like, for like Dominica. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this means what, like Alonzo Mourning and Carmelo Anthony and, you know, just like lots of really good basketball players who weren't necessarily like the greatest basketball player.
Yeah.
Are in the Olympics Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we can go ahead and put them in. I think we should pitchfork it and downgrade people historically, go back to a gold and be like,
not impressed.
Come on,
the you know, the gold price of gold has fluctuated over time, so
You know, we could really get American tourists flowing back to museums and whatnot if every one of them had some kind of built different function,
mm-hmm.
where in front of every exhibit you could like push a button and record for history why that wouldn't have happened to you. It just says like respect to Nancy Kerrigan, but, and you hit the button and record.
Mm-hmm. But unlike Batman's parents, she survived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, the Hindenburg. I would have jumped free. Just would have jumped clear.
I simply would have tucked and rolled.
If you jump right as it explodes, it will push you away.
That's what I said. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then instead of oh God the humanity, oh God the human who has escaped the catastrophe.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of explosions, Jason, would you like to tell us about this Myrtle Beach story we've got from Josh?
Let's see here. Let me track it down real quick.
Sorry, I hit Control F explosion on the dock and popped up like five stories. Okay. So two well different Myrtle Beach explosions.
We're so loaded today.
This story comes to us from Josh, as noted. My dad took us to my grandparents' trailer outside Myrtle Beach for vacation. See, that's a hot start, folks. It said Myrtle Beach. The trailer had been unoccupied for a couple years, and my father thought, I must spend my vacation improving this land. He mowed and cut and whatnot until he got to an old boat and quickly determined it must be destroyed. Got it. Good. He poured gas all over it, but a bunch of gas fumes built up in the cabin because I guess he may have used too much gas. The concussive blast from the boat knocked the satellite dish off the trailer. The family exited to find my father, looking rather put out, stomping on various fires that had started in the yard and already minimizing his involvement in the explosion. I think it's blaming the shape of the cabin is probably where dad logic goes. It didn't have good airflow.
So I'm picturing this
Philly meme where it holds up both hands, just like listen.
Listen, there's a PR saying here. If you're not spinning, you're standing still. Okay,
that's right.
You just got to start. You got to start.
Get that mouth moving for better. Post through it, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
This is a theme we'll come back to on this episode. A particular dad disaster is when you set out to burn or explode something, and then you get mad because you burned or exploded it too much.
You did your job too well.
Like it's very rarely is it oh. Something was accidentally set on fire or something accidentally blew up that was not intended to blow up. It's
the
almost
fire
always...
did not obey my will.
Right.
Yes.
I am not the elementalist I thought myself.
Dang it, I take it off the leash and it just does all this.
Yes,
I can't take it nowhere.
Like
it
the is... fire is an ornery pet.
Right, like it's a nephew that won't listen. Fire, get back fire. Here! Settle down!
Fire just can't listen.
Fire, get
fire,
off
get
the roof!
Get off that swing set!
Get off the roof, fire!
Go on, get! I have another Myrtle Beach disaster.
Wow.
This is Matt from 803, who... also, some of you guys... some of you may hear your voicemails read on the show because your connection was bad, or you talk boring. Matt from 803 talked very well, but his connection was kind of fuzzy, so we're going to read this one aloud. So my family was on vacation in Myrtle Beach. We were coming back from, I don't know, mini golf or something, going back to the condo. Here's the sentence. My dad was driving and getting increasingly upset that no one else was ordering a pizza. He decided... he decided he was going to order them. So dad's hangry. And decided he was going, and this apparently is fairly recent because, and I know that this is recent because of the next sentence, dad decided he was going to order pizzas himself via Domino's app while driving.
What, just like fucking meet me somewhere and throw it as I pass?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Like
just leave it somewhere
and
I will pick it up like it's a power up.
I'll race you there. I'll race the delivery.
I'll drive over it and receive a boost.
Pizza time.
Well, speaking of driving over things and receiving boosts, dad hit a curb.
Of pizza.
Not like dad hit a curb. It wasn't like a slanted curb. It was like a four-lane highway, 3-4-6-inch median curb, at about a 30-degree angle, which launched the car up a notable amount and completely blew out the tire. When we did finally come to a stop, we noticed that the rim wasn't shattered somehow, but we did need to change the tire. And while my dad was changing the tire, I made a comment along the lines of being surprised we only blew a tire, and it wasn't worse that we didn't get shot across four lanes of traffic and into another vehicle, to which my dad replied, "Well, I'm a good driver." Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
I willed the car to behave. Stop it.
He said get, and it got.
Can I read a different car one?
Mm-hmm. Oh, please do.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is from our friend Hector. My dad used to have this beat up 1993 Nissan Maxima that he would swear still worked. It drove fine, but the problem was that it worked if you opened the hood and hotwired it. Sometimes it started like a normal car should, but the success rate was 50-50. It was our emergency car and the first car I got to drive. Those things are very different. So I got really good at messing with car batteries. Dad claimed he didn't fix this problem intentionally so no one would steal the car. Again, we're talking about a 1993 Nissan Maxima.
I rigged it as a fucking trap. So the collectors of this ancient Maxima.
I also like that we're talking about car thieves who are so stumped when the car won't start that they wouldn't possibly hotwire. Totally off the table.
We're from the honorary guild of car thieves who do not hardwire. What kind of
bullshit Indiana Jones did temple like?
We only steal keys, not cars. Right.
So here's the twist. Anyway, one day he parked the car in the driveway near the front gate and tried turning the ignition. It didn't turn on. So he opened the hood to start it up the dad way. And he might have accidentally left the car in drive with a dead battery, because as soon as he jumped it, the car started moving without him in it. The car kept going until it pinned him to the gate. My dad hit himself with his own car.
ghost riding.
Dad admitted ghost riding.
Which I just... Like, do you file an insurance claim at that point?
No. I mean, just to spread the word of how awesome you are.
Yeah.
You call up Allstate, like, hey, you want to hear some crazy shit?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got hit by a ghost.
The dad myself. Disaster that I was thinking about from my own life when we were talking about this, many of them have been mentioned already on the show, but I have another non-moving car disaster from my father. This is one of my favorites. The boys club in the town where I grew up sells Christmas trees, and my dad volunteered to work the Christmas tree lap. So we were there picking out a tree one year. I had driven my 1989 Jeep Cherokee, you know, the steel box on wheels, and we had hoisted the tree up onto the roof, and my father had insisted that he was not going to use the proffered twine because he had brought a series of cords from home that he wanted to test out.
The good cords.
Right. He has very specific opinion. This is maybe his most dad-like thing, is a long, long series of opinions about bungee cords. So he gets the tree attached to the car without, because he didn't want to, like, you know, he didn't want to waste twine. And the joke that he made was I'm going to save a plastic tree. And he repeated this all day. And by the time he gets the tree secured, we realize that he has tied all the door handles shut.
Yep. Yep.
And I am like 16 at that point, and I just dive in through the front window, lickety split. My dad is like, I don't actually know how tall my dad is, like 6'2", 6'4", somewhere in there. Yeah. So dad is trying to fold himself in through the passenger window of a Jeep Cherokee. Somebody at the boys club has a Polaroid camera and a plaque with a photograph of him trying to fold himself in through the window mysteriously appeared on the wall of the boys club sometime after New Year's. Thank you, Dad.
I feel like your dad, like all dads, also can only bend into different right angles. Like, there is no sort of, like, flexibility. It's just sort of, like, using a very old Lego piece where it's just, like, it can go flat or it can be a T. That's it.
All dads are Tetris pieces.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Not the helpful ones either. I have I have, I'm going to start light. I'm going to stretch a little bit, but this is a good one. It's from Robert. Dad and uncle got into a fight over who would drive home after getting drunk at a Gamecocks game. My dad got his ass beat so bad my uncle rubbed his face in the pavement in the street in Columbia in September.
Oh, no. That's a trip to the burn ward.
Go Cox!
And then they had to drive home.
You got to put some Hardee's on that real quick. Swelling go down.
He just put a big Buford right over that. It'll just soak up all that hurt.
Rub a big Buford across there.
Is it worse if this happened at a night game or a noon game?
Noon.
Noon.
Pavement's hotter.
Noon.
Night game, first of all, you're so drunk that you might fall asleep halfway through the maneuver.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it's down to, like, you know, only like 89 degrees outside.
Right.
Also, what makes this a classic South Carolina and dad story, it's two grown men who have already gotten drunk, now arguing over why the other got drunk, right?
I thought you were driving!
Yeah, they're arguing about who has had the worst ideas all day long.
We should have beat Mississippi State. You shut up.
I know. And I also know that at one point they were both two drinks in and they thought, well, he'll stop because I ain't.
At what point did their eyes meet over the edge of the cup?
I think that's his third. I think that's his third.
Did they lock eyes and chug at any point? This is all I know.
Oh, yeah. No, they had to.
Hey, Cooper, let's do a drinking game. Every time we run for exactly 3 yards, finish your drink. You're on. Wait, sir.
Oh, it's 2nd and 10. Time to drink. I can feel it.
Hey, Cerber, we've got a voicemail from 973 that also encompasses disagreeing over whether one is injured.
Oh, yeah, let's hear what they have to
say. So the relevant sentence in here, in case you were wondering, is, so my dad had recently watched D2, The Mighty Ducks. Mm. How could that lead to harm?
Hey, so when we were kids, we went to play soccer with my dad and my brother. And I was in goal and asked my dad to shoot as hard as he possibly could at me. And so he went to do that, but at the very last second, my 7-year-old brother jumped in front of it, and there was an audible crack, and he collapsed crying, holding his arm. So we go home, and my mom wanted to take him to the hospital, but my dad had just recently watched D2, The Mighty Ducks, and in it, there was a scene where Coach Bombay has Adam Banks rotate a hockey stick to test if his arm is still broken. So my brother winces through it and does it, and my dad says conclusively, like, well, his arm's not broken, so we're not going to the hospital. A week goes by, and we're out at dinner, and my brother still cannot pick up, like, a drink. So he couldn't lift up a cup of Coke. And so my mom has it, and she's like, okay, we're going to the hospital. They go to the hospital, and the doctor, before even seeing the x-ray, says, oh, yeah, that's broken. And my mom's furious, but my dad pivots to the offensive and says that, well, the week let the swelling go down, so he didn't need to get a temporary cast, so he could immediately get a hard cast.
All part of the plan.
Smart.
But
smart.
He did feel bad, so he got my brother a new hockey stick as sort of like a condolences thing. Possibly important note, but my dad is an MD. All right, take care.
So a doctor took medical advice from a fictional hockey coach who is only there because he got a DUI. I want to be clear that that's what we're talking about. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, to be clear, one time I was introduced to a guy who finished toward the bottom of his med school, and they said, well, he's still a doctor, thus that's why we call him Dr. Stupid.
And the guy who is known as Dr. Stupid, who, yes, is an Auburn fan from South Alabama, said, "Yeah, man, that's me. I'm Dr. Stupid."
Listen, my former father-in-law is a family physician, and I think I've actually mentioned before on the show about how when I burned all the skin off my leg at Thanksgiving, he thought I didn't need to go to the hospital, and that's how I ended up missing the kick six. But he told me something that I've never forgotten, which is that there are dumbasses in every workplace. Like, it's a hospital is a workplace like any other. There are dumb shits at NASA. There are dumb shits at the hospital. There are dumb shits at the funeral home. You know, like, having this job doesn't make you smart.
Do doctors
you can be smart
just,
and have this job.
Do dad doctors maybe just avoid, like, hospital trips because they're like, oh, that's my work. I don't want to go. Oh, it sucks.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to work today.
Ryan, ask your dad. I would actually be very curious about this.
I can't take the I'm not going back to the office.
Oh, you're fine. Shut up. Why do we have to go to my work?
They're going
to
make me do a surgery on my kid. I asked around for one of my own to confess, and the story we tell most often is my daughter went to the elementary school that's like 3 minutes away for a time. And so my gimmick was, instead of driving to pick her up, I would just walk to pick her up and carry her home on my shoulders. It was cute. It was fun. This was pre-K. There was one day where she was real quiet. And as we were walking home, I was like, boy, it smells bad out here today. Usually we walk past a Burger King and has this very deceptively good smoked meat smell, but it's a lie. Don't fall for it. But I wasn't smelling the smoked meat. In fact, it was smelling like the inside of a Burger King. And eventually got her home, and she was still real quiet. And sat her down and just sort of said, did you poop your pants at school? You know? Just said it more gently than that, and the story came out that she'd pooped her pants like hours ago in lunch. So I carried her home in the 95 degree heat as she sat on my shoulders with jeans full of like 4 hour old poop. So yeah, that was that day. Then I like clocked back into writing sports blogs after we cleaned off her butt. So that was mine. And can I read one as well?
Is this the one about the airport?
You have my favorite one.
I'm going to read my favorite one. There are many favorites, but this is my personal favorite. It comes from Charlie. Charlie in Eastern Iowa. All right. In November 2002, my dad, then a police detective, purchased a whole 130-pound lamb from a farmer. Whole.
Can I pause real quick?
Yes.
This one gets rough. Like,
yeah,
is this a content warning?
This is absolutely a content. Mostly because, like, if you have like sensitive children who listen to this podcast,
have
like,
you ever done one of those?
Content
have
warning.
Have you?
Vegetarians, please leave the room.
No, I haven't read this.
Understand why. Please go ahead, Jason.
No, I'm not doubting you. I'm just marveling because I don't think we've ever done a content warning.
Yeah, it's gonna go places. Please, sorry.
Okay.
130-pound lamb, whole, alive. Dad's a pretty good cook, and he had plans for this thing. Dad dropped the sheep as humanely as possible with a well-placed bullet behind the ear and put the entire thing into a very large plastic tote in the back of his pickup. He then started the 90-minute drive home. 30 minutes later, he looks in the rearview mirror and sees the top of the tote fly off. He begins to slow down. He sees the sheep stand up in the tote. Panic washes over him. He brakes hard, and the half-contained sheep slides up against the cab. He pulls over and runs around to the back of the pickup just as the sheep, crazed and covered in blood, is about to jump out. It's broad-ass daylight. Without thinking, he punches the sheep in the forehead. The sturdiest, least yielding part on the whole animal, and breaks a bone in his hand. The sheep doesn't budge and instead sneezes a large quantity of bloody foam all over Dad's glasses, head, and torso. He is now covered in blood and can't see. So, and honestly, the rest of this is the upsetting stuff so far is great and awesome. And honestly, I feel fine cutting it right there because it gets... I don't know, man. It gets insane.
Oh, God. I don't want to read. I just read the rest of it. I don't want to read the rest of it.
I told you.
The punch is the full cast part, okay?
Uh-huh.
Everything after that is absolute horror.
The sheep is eventually dispatched, and you're better off not hearing how.
Yeah, so Dad is standing on the side of a busy four-lane highway, covered in blood. Cars are swerving. People are looking. No authorities called.
There's some No Country for
Old Men. That's the type of shit that goes down in eastern Iowa.
Punching a zombie sheep.
I read it and I thought of the Liam Neeson's film where he punches wolves. Mm-hmm. This is even better. Punching sheep.
I just thought of the Pine Barrens, right? Like, I heard that sheep was an interior decorator in Serbia. Yeah, but his house looked like shit.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm shaken.
Oh,
and that's like, there's a whole film after that, is horrifying. Just, I don't even know, man. What's this here?
This is from Matt. A lot of them are from Matt. Spoiler.
Oh, that's because if they didn't leave their name, I just put their name was Matt.
Oh, I put in the names from the emails, and it's just a lot of fucking Matts.
Like, okay, this is on the voicemail. If you didn't leave your name, your name is Matt, as usual. Okay, because odds are.
My divorced parents scheduled our separate family trips to visit grandparents back to back one summer. Dad was going to take us to Nevada. Mom was going to take us to California. After driving the three of us kids and stepmom out to Nevada in his 6-seater SUV, Dad decides, without telling anybody ahead of time so that we can plan for it, that he can get us extra vacation time by just driving us straight down to California while my mom flies out, and then we'll all fly home back with mom after her side of the vacation. So 2 days before the children and the mother are scheduled to fly from Detroit to California, he calls his ex-wife to schedule a time to drop us off after the flight. But here is where the problem shows up. Airlines have what this Matt says is a crazy policy, but I would say is actually one of the less crazy airline policies. Mm-hmm. That if you have a round trip flight and you don't show up for the first part, they cancel your return flight. So now Dad has less than 48 hours to get from Lake Tahoe to Detroit in order to make a flight that will then go back to California. 36 and a half hours consecutively in the car later, the five of us arrive at Mom's house a solid 6 hours before we are scheduled to fly back across the country.
That's, you know what? The most Dad thing about it, 6 hours before the flight. 6 hours before
the
flight.
That's my favorite
airport early.
Fox chicken rowboat.
The other Dad part thing about it is that, like, I think at some point you would say, like, okay, well, what if I just cancel that flight and just buy the kids one-way tickets? Can we do that? Like, right. we know the seats mm-hmm. are there. Just cancel them, swap them. Nope. We're going to drive in an SUV for 36 hours because I will not be bested by these shameless airline rules meant to trick good and honorable dads of my status.
That's what people do to flee countries, right? They drive a day and a half.
Yeah.
With five people in the car. Yeah.
I assume, like, the maddest of all of these people had to have been the stepmom, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
I have another automotive disaster. Serber, can we pull up 479 Christina's mom's car?
Hi, this is Christina from Arkansas, and I have a dad disaster. So my mother's car looks alarmingly like the cars that state troopers drive. And one day she went out to get in her car, and the front of it was all kinds of fucked up. It looked like it had been hit with something, or it was sort of crunched up and dented. And she, you know, there was no note. She calls the police. The police come. And they tell her that her car looks like their cars, and that it is possible. The car looks like it had been hit with a golf club or a bat, and that it was possible that her car had been vandalized by people who thought it was like an undercover police car. she still believes that that happened. But really, my dad backed into her in the parking lot of their apartment complex and just never told her. And he has let her believe that she was the victim of an anti-police hate crime. simply because he did not want to tell her that he backed into the car. She still believes this, does not know. We have been instructed that we must take this to our grave. I would call that a dad disaster. Yeah. Love the show. Bye.
Thanks, Christina.
This isn't exactly stolen valor, but it's somewhere in that ballpark.
I love that, by the way, that's setting up Antifa to be blamed for an entire series of, like, errors by fathers, right? Or by anyone, right? Like, oh, yeah, Antifa blew the mortgage at the Golden Nugget. Yeah, that's who did that.
Gosh, who did eat all the ice cream sandwiches? Probably Antifa.
It's probably George Soros, who forgot to take out the garbage can. It was the fucking Illuminati who didn't close the bathroom door.
Barack Hussein Obama.
I got you a nice birthday gift, Susan. Antifa must have replaced it with this crap.
I just looked it up. A 36-hour drive would take you from Atlanta to Seattle.
God, Jesus Christ.
Good night.
Hey, I found the body horror one I was looking up for a minute ago.
It's not Dad A and Dad B?
No.
And I'll put that one next.
This is no name given. This guy's from Long Island. This was in the voicemail line. Dad grew up on the 50s. You're about to hear a familiar phrase on the podcast. Dad grew up in the 50s on Long Island in New York, and back then it was apparently really easy to get your hands on explosives. So a story ensues where a tree falls that is blocking the path of a tire swing, and this guy's dad, as a child, decides to blow up the offending tree and takes off the entirety of his own hand. All right. So we're going to pick back up. That's not the disaster.
This is the preface?
Yeah. We're going to pick back up. The bomb blew up while he was holding it, completely taking off his left hand. I've never known my father to have two hands, and this would be sad if it weren't for the fact that this is probably his single favorite story. The scar that remains looks like a U, and when I was a little kid, when he flexed, the muscle in his left arm would come up like a smile on the U. He used to put googly eyes and lipstick on it and turn his stub into a sock puppet and do shows for me and my friends. So I think that is what makes it funny and not just sad. Ooh, hopefully you agree. Thank you, Long Island. Yeah. Thank you, Matt, from Long Island.
Do you see this guy's freaking stub?
I will say...
It does voices. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
So the call for this episode was just dad disasters. That's it. And we've obviously done lots of other disasters, some of which sort of overlap here. There's some Thanksgiving in here. There's some vacation.
There's a lot of lawn care in here.
There's a lot of lawn care, But this, by far, compared to every other submission call we've had, had the most, like... drastic injury rate. Not even close. Yeah. Like the number of serious injuries that resulted, people are like, he's blind in that eye now, or he lost those fingers. Like,
wildlife disasters did not have this many.
No, it was
like
amazing.
Like if we do like uncle disasters, it's like broken ankle. Dad disaster is like beheaded.
He's fine. He's
hey,
good.
Speaking of beheading, let's go back to Dad A and Dad B.
Okay, so Dad A and Dad B, before we start, I want to say that this story contains, honestly, the most terrible judgment...
By volume,
of any story we've ever told on this podcast involving dads.
There is one thing that I didn't put in the description here, which I should have. The person who sent this story in is like a volunteer EMT, and that's why he is involved in the story, and... But it's not like an ambulance just driving around making ambulance calls. This is like a rural
situation.
Which
would be funny.
Yes. Yeah. This is just like a more rural situation where like people are just like, I'm the EMT for the town. So,
but this makes it better because this happened to this dude at work.
Yes.
Correct.
I've never at
unpaid work.
Yes, at unpaid work. And I have never seen a collective incompetence score like I have seen in this story.
No, it's extraordinary.
Local Dad A was taking the boys down to the creek for a swim when they came across the gigantic timber rattler sunning on the asphalt. Dad A, being half lit and not a snake wrangler, decided it'd be a good idea to teach the boys how to handle a venomous snake. It's start right there.
I feel like we should have music for this.
Start right there. Decided how to handle a venomous snake. Yeah. Building. He pulled the large tree limb off the side of the road and used it to pin the snake to the ground. He then picked the fucking snake up, this is all caps, and let his kids pet it. This is the first paragraph.
Without incident
to this point. Dad's
the whole
hands
dad's
lost
dominion over nature.
So far, this story is just Pentecostal.
Fire, yes. Cars, snakes, dad controls all.
Four food groups.
At this point, we're just Australian, right?
Yeah.
He's just picked up a venomous snake, and he has displayed his mastery over said venomous snake.
This is how a passion play plays out in Australia, actually.
This is where it gets real, I'm just going to guess, Arkansas.
Jesus picks up the third snake.
Dad's hands lost grip on the snake's head, and the snake was able to turn its head and strike him on the hand. Dad dropped the snake and put the boys in the bed of the truck to keep them safe, I guess? Sure. We're just... I like that we're actually questioning the design here at this point for the first time. Not, I decided to show the kids how to handle a snake when I was half drunk. Continuing. Does Dad drive himself to the hospital or call for help?
Yes.
Fuck no.
Absolutely not. He gets the comically oversized monkey wrench out of his truck to bash the snake's head in. I'm gonna go womp that snake's
That's
ass.
That's why it's called a monkey wrench. It's for
it's
wild
like
life.
It's like paper, rock, scissors. Snake, dad, monkey wrench.
In his drunken and envenomated state, he approaches the snake and swings the huge wrench like a club. He misses. The snake strikes him again on the leg.
His accuracy, like the
snake is just taunting at this point.
Like it said on screen, it said 40% chance of contact. He said, yes. "Press attack."
Yes, this is playing out exactly like a turn-based combat game where you are way in over your head. You need
failure.
To you got to go grind some more, Dad.
Minus 20% envenomated.
This is me every time I play Fallout. Every time.
Hey, Daryl, fetch the mana.
We continue with this outtake from Elden Ring, Arkansas.
Elden Ring.
Dad realizes he's now officially fucked up and calls 911. Mind you, not
so
the
he
first
had the ability to call 911.
Right, mm-hmm. Not the first rattlesnake bite, but the second one. He's like, he's got me.
Fool me
fair
once. Bite me once.
All right, you bastard.
Okay, so
you're not biting me a third time.
Ryan, the back end of that phrase is fool me twice. Let's see what happens.
We're halfway through the story. In the 10 minutes between me getting the call, because remember, this guy's a volunteer paramedic, and arriving on scene, local dad B pulls up.
Oh, no.
Sees local dad A in distress and gets out to, and this is the word he uses, help. Dad B has a hoe in the back seat of his car, because why wouldn't he? He gets the hoe out.
That is the best snake killing implement in the common household tool arsenal.
It's the best choice. It's the best choice of weapon.
Yes.
Dad B loves snakes, and he wants to move the
Dad
very
B has joined your party.
It sounds like he's joined the snake party. It's the problem. The snake didn't need backup, but it has it never. Snake is achieving its final form without sustaining any damage.
I mean, thank goodness he didn't call the cops, because the cops would have been like, hold on a second.
The cops would have shot him.
Yeah, the cops would have been like, the snake's got some points.
Cops shoot him and plant a snake on him.
Right. Yeah. So Dad B produces a hoe. I should say, in the original submission, these men were identified by their cars, and this dad was listed as Oldsmobile Dad, if that helps. Oh,
thank you.
Cruising with an Oldsmobile and the hoe with a hoe in the back. That Dad B loves snakes, and he wants to move the very pissed-off rattler off the road into the woods. The snake was every inch of 6 feet long. If you've ever seen a rattlesnake, that is a huge goddamn rattlesnake. Oh, my God.
This is either Arkansas or Alabama.
That's a beast of a rattlesnake.
We might have gone full Missouri.
Ooh. Yeah.
Dad B.
Yeah, the Oldsmobile.
Yeah. Dad B starts trying to move him, but the snake ain't having it. The snake launches at the bare leg and flip-flop foot of Dad B.
You gotta equip your items. You can't just go into battle equipping flip-flops.
The snake turned on its own ally.
Come on.
I had my good snake fighting flip-flops on.
I thought we were friends. But I love snakes.
This is the dad that loves snakes.
I'm showing the snake how much I trust it.
I got eight hit points. It'll be fine. Let's go.
Damage taken.
Oh, dang it. I was wearing my suit of armor up top. I forgot. I exposed myself by wearing my cargs. This is how, like, every woman's armor works in, like, a fighting game, where it's like, oh, her boobs were covered, but she got punched in the stomach. Nobody saw that coming.
Exposed midriff was a bad idea for armor. And strikes him just above the ankle, causing him to panic and start wildly swinging the hoe. He hits the back end of the snake, removing several inches on its tail.
Hit!
Critical hit!
Well, so, no. All you've done now is remove the snake's warning system.
Yes, that's right.
Intensifying the primal reptilian rage. The snake launches again, this time, striking him on the tip of his middle finger. Oh, so you can't even
Good
shoot
aim,
the bird
snake.
In anger.
Now he can't even tell the bird he hates it.
Dad B now realizes he, too, is fucked up big time.
Dad C.
I got this.
We got to get Charizard Dad in here.
In perfect harmony, both dads go to the glove box of their vehicles.
Oh, no.
And arm themselves with handguns for the final battle.
And they stand.
What is the EMT doing at this time?
I assume they're standing on opposite sides of the snake facing each other.
They look at each other. Listen, man, I didn't save my game before this. We really got to get this done.
I'm trying to get the bad ending. I hear you unlock a really ugly hat.
You know, when they say video games promote deviant behavior, I don't actually think they're talking about mass shootings. I think they're talking about this shit.
Yeah. They're bad for dads. Dad just can't handle it. Mm-hmm.
Rattlesnake venom works fast.
That should have been the opening line of the story.
And within a few minutes, most people experience severe pain and swelling, along with nausea, vomiting, and trouble breathing. Both dads were there. Fortunately, they're armed, y'all. Dizzy and lethargic, they slid down the front ends of their vehicles and began firing poorly aimed shots in the general direction of the snake and each other.
There we go.
Screw you, Dad P! I had this!
I'm taking all both you motherfuckers down with me.
You'll probably bite me too.
Both of you about 6 feet.
The traitors.
I spent this whole day being bitten by six.
Stand up
things.
And fight me at your proper height.
Can I remind you that there's still four kids in the bed of a truck watching this shit? They're just watching two adults who are staggering around with huge swollen limbs and hands and legs and handcuffs firing.
In school, we call this project-based learning.
I can't think of a better introduction to what actual adulthood is.
This is like watching somebody. This is like watching somebody bust on a hand of blackjack and demand more cards. 23. Hit me! More!
These kids are all anarchists. They're like, yeah, institutions will save us.
No gods, no masters.
No gods, no masters.
No dads.
No dads.
Two dads, no masters.
We made it to the ER where nurses were waiting to get them treated. The four kids were still in the bed of the truck, seemingly unfazed by the ordeal.
Oh, they've seen this before.
I unloaded them into the waiting room and left them in the care of the ER security guard. Probably the most responsible adult in this story besides you, sir.
Kids, what happened? Dad ran into Jerry again.
Luckily, both dads survived with no lasting issues, and their kids learned a valuable lesson about not messing with snakes.
Did they?
As far as I know, the snake also survived.
Hell yeah!
That's still out there to this day, seeking dads it may devour.
That snake is legally the dad of all those kids now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's a good provider.
He will protect you better than the dads did. You know what? You know what won't pick up a snake for you to hug? Another snake.
And that snake grew up to be stone cold.
Cerber, that snake did grow up to be stone cold. 100%. That snake, by the way, if you catch it red dead, make a pair of boots on it, you can fly. The snake is the biggest badass in the universe.
Perfect pelt.
This is the most perfect pelt. God damn. Oh, yeah. All right. I need a break. Whew.
Here, I'll take a break. The actual story here that Joe from Illinois told, that's a little bit of a weird one. The actual story here involves Joe's dad getting free tickets to Six Flags thanks to his dad's windbreaker cord catching on a fence post at the Six Flags in Gurnee, Illinois, and the little plastic thingy on the end of his windbreaker cord rebounded and hit him in the eye. But twice throughout the telling of this voicemail story, I thought the first one was a mistake, but he used it twice. You know that thing where you mean one word, but you think a word has another meaning, and so you keep using it? Mm-hmm. So in relaying the story of their journey through the back end of Six Flags, Joe from Illinois repeatedly uses the word hospice in place of what I'm guessing is hospitality, introducing into the universe the concept of the Six Flags hospice. And I just thought that deserves some recognition, even though the story itself is fairly benign.
Somewhere Dan Snyder was like, yeah, we can make that work. Yeah, that'll work. That's a business plan right there, baby.
Johnny Rockets will do the catering. Yeah. Yeah, we'll sell our mattresses there.
We have to sing to these? Yes, you have to sing. It's Johnny Rockets.
Hey, listen, what is Six Flags Great Adventure? What is the greatest adventure of all but the journey beyond the veil?
We had to build it. We had to correct it from the older hospice, which was Confederate themed. Which
no,
was,
no, they're keeping the Confederate themed hospice. They're just going to bury everybody in it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The states' rights hospice. Yes.
There have been a number of roller coaster fatalities at Six Flags, as I believe we've covered on one or another episode of this podcast before.
Yeah, so more like Six Flags under Georgia.
Six feet under Georgia.
There we go.
Six Flags hospice is coming.
This could be a relevant alternate business model for Six Flags.
Anyway, thank you to Joe from Illinois for repeatedly saying hospice during this voicemail. That's all.
I would like to offer one that is a visual, because, of course, visual medium. This was not the primary story that Chris sent in, but I think it is the better one. My dad attempted to cut the tops off of his Air Monarchs to make them into beach shoes.
To and make now, them into what?
Beach shoes. And now, I am going to put into our chat, and we can, I guess we'll just tweet it out.
Yeah, let's just tweet the photos.
Hold on.
Oh, wait. Let's see.
That should be openable for all of you.
Yeah, hang on.
Yeah, hold on a second.
So oh my god!
They're even more amazing than I expected. It's literally just the toes.
Yes, it's just like
a toe flap.
It's just like a it's like a peep toe monarch.
It looks like a car without a hood.
You can still see the Air Monarchs.
I feel like I can see Pete Carroll's toes right now.
These were clearly done with just average scissors.
Just
in no way was anything.
Yeah, I dispute that this is a disaster.
I also like that the stated purpose of these is, yeah, I want to wear these somewhere with sand. I want to wear these in the sand.
This is just creating a sand entry system.
What if I could have shoes that always had sand in them? Do you mean sandals? No. Much sweatier than a sandal.
Might have been a detritus intake system.
But with all the stink of a sneaker,
What if a child's beach scoop could be shoes?
Also, concerning the nasal factors of this shoe, there are no socks involved.
No, because they're beach socks. Because Jason, they're beach shoes now. We don't wear socks to the beach.
Why would you wear socks to the beach, idiot?
What I would like to You're right. This is a perfect design. Otherwise, what I would like to see is some sort of an outlet valve in the back. Can we do that? Can we modify that so that all the detritus is an airflow system where the sand and sea grime is just being emitted out of the back?
Right. You're sort of saying, what if Air Monarchs and Tevas had a baby that they hated? What if that?
I would just like a big old blasting exhaust system. Just spraying.
If he had done this with like Reebok pumps and could have rerouted the tubing inside the shoe to blow beach detritus out the back.
Yeah. The most dad thing about this isn't the act itself, nor is it the shoes. It's that this man did this, looked at it, and said, yep, we'll wear and we'll show. Because like you can have the idea and you can give it a shot, and you should look at this and say no. This is not to be put on anyone's feet, much less to be shown off to my family. But that's not what this dad did. He said, look, I fucking did it.
I think this is the dad. This is the dad of the year. And this is dad of the year. No hand.
Thank you,
hands
Matt.
Down.
You're the dad of the year.
Also,
I'm gonna put the sneakers got him over this.
Yes. Hang on a second.
It also looks like the rest of the fit is set off with some sweat shorts.
That's what I was gonna. Y'all, those legs look young. Are we sure this is not the caller and not the caller's father?
I think Dad's just in great shape from all that jogging.
Those
on the
legs
beach.
Look ageless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Dad's
yeah. That's because he's getting a lot of vitamin D.
And
on his feet. Yep.
The sandblasting is wearing away all the harms of age.
Yeah, no,
okay, so this is the summer-based inverse to warning that heat escapes from your head, so you have to wear a hat in the winter. You have to absorb vitamins through the feet in the summer.
Like roots, like a tree.
No, this all makes sense now.
This looks like if hobbits were from Michigan.
Yeah, I went down to the Hobbit Outlet store. Pretty sweet, I gotta tell you.
Got a nice pair of shoes, Ed. You should go get a pair.
If I
your
take
toes
one
are out
more
everything.
One more step in my Air Monarchs with open toes, I'll be the farthest from Michigan I've ever been.
He's at Lake Michigan.
He's still in Michigan. He's in Toledo.
The other thing is, I guarantee you this dad was like, well, now I got to buy another regular pair of Air Monarchs because these are the beach ones.
Look, Cheryl, something happened to my Monarchs. Guess I got to buy more.
For some reason, the visible Air Monarch lettering on the tongues of the shoes is the part of this that's the funniest.
That's the killer.
Because lends an air of endorsement from Nike to what is happening below.
It sounds so literal.
Yeah.
This man has become the monarch of air.
We've always agreed that with sandals, the stability was inherently in anchoring between the big toe and the next little toe. These things.
Yeah, now he's got ankle support.
Yeah, no, if you have ankle support for your entire foot to go shearing through the front like a bobsled out of a tunnel, that's what you have here.
Also, note they are tied nice and snug because. It's important.
Ready for action.
It's important to be wearing normal shoes.
This is the least successful gladiator you're seeing right here.
Disagree.
You see a gladiator in the Air Monarchs, you're just like, I'm only using one sword. Screw the net.
Oh, dear God.
Are you not ready to grill?
You've also taken away the one protection that you have with even soft shoes, which is protecting the toe. Yeah. Instead, you're like, break them all! Stub every last one of them!
I have another craft one I would like to read for crafty dads.
Craft is such a kind word, but please go ahead.
This is from Alex. In 1992, the San Francisco Giants were going to be sold to Tampa Bay, and my father could not bear that. A season ticket holder since he turned 18, he was desperate for the team to stay. So much so that one weekend when my mother was out of town, he painted the entire back of their house neon orange with Save Our Giants painted over it in black. My father is very much not the handyman type, but also he did this to the house he and my mother were just a few months away from selling. When they did, when they did eventually sell the house, a condition of the sale was that he had to repaint the entire back of the house in its original color. My mom made sure he did this by himself. The Giants stayed in San Francisco at the end, and here is where I disagree with Alex, who said, "I don't think this helped at all." Disagree.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's, yep. How much?
The emanations throughout the universe.
What do we think they lost on this sale? $10,000? $15,000?
Oh, what year was? Oh, this was 1992. Yeah.
So it wasn't. It's not that much, but it's probably like $10,000. Like probably somebody was like, "What's the list price?" No, we're not paying that. Yeah, we're not paying list for your fucking amateur mural house. Absolutely. Yeah, by the way,
this was not a little deal. I remember because I lived in St. Pete at the time, which is where they were going to relocate. In the stadium that eventually belonged to the Rays. This was a big deal. I read about this in the paper.
Wow.
And the reaction was pretty much like, yeah, what an idiot.
The deal was done, but you can't move.
Wait, you mean the house painting was in the paper?
No, the house painting. Yeah, no.
Oh, I read about this is that guy.
I read about this dude's dad in the St. Pete Times, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, my God.
So I love that this blew up before social media. That's the amazing part.
Yeah.
It's like if somebody did this today, it'd be like, oh, I'll give that 8 seconds of attention and then forget it ever happened. This was like, this is a commitment.
I think that backs up Holly's point that this did change the course of baseball history.
Yeah, yeah. The Tampa St. Pete folks were like, oh, we can't get involved here.
Yeah.
We want no part of this.
Why are you hating? Why are you hating, Alex?
Shouts out to everyone else coming out stupid of the story, by the way. Not only the homeowners, but also the St. Pete Tampa people who were like, this guy's a moron. They're coming. They're coming to the Bay, baby! Who wouldn't want to come to Tampa?
Serber, can we play voicemail 832 from Splash Mountain?
Close to Jason. Hi, I would like to just share a little dad disaster with the Shutdown Fullcast crew. This is about my own father. I was probably about 13 years old, and we went to Disneyland, and we actually took my best friend. I have three little brothers and a little sister as well. Based on the fact that my family is large and we went to Disneyland, you are correct. I am Mormon. anyway. So we were going on Splash Mountain one last time, and it was a little bit chilly at night, and we got around the bend on that first part of Splash Mountain where you can see the people coming down the log flume, but you're way early in the ride. But we got stopped right there where the log flume is supposed to carry you up to the next little level before you start to go up and around and then down finally into the ride. Not to spoil it for anyone that hasn't ridden on it, but... The point being is we got stuck there because I don't know what they were doing, getting someone off the ride, on the ride, something was stuck, whatever. And there were two little jets of water that would shoot over every time a log would go down the flume. And it just so happened that this was on a timer. It wasn't based log specifically. So even after they stopped all the logs, about every 15 seconds, two jets of water would shoot over the log flume, and it would hit my two brothers directly in the head. They were probably about 8 and 10 years old. And it was funny the first 3 or 4 times, and then they started to cry until about the 40th time. And my dad was just kind of yelling out into space, kind of saying, like, hey, can we please move this log flume? And there was no response. And then he stood up out of the log, and he walked over and found the first security camera that he could find, and he started yelling into it. And finally, we heard over the intercom speaker, sir, get back in the log. And he refused to. No one came out to get him. And he finally got back in the log. And for about 5 more minutes after that, my brothers kept getting squirted on the head with water. Finally, the ride started moving. We went all the way through the ride. My brothers are absolutely drenched head to toe. Every time we go inside the ride and it's air conditioned, they're like shivering and freezing. We get to the bottom, and my dad, who was on family leave from serving in Iraq at the time, begins to yell at the, I guess, shift leader for the Splash Mountain ride in Disneyland, and they yell at each other for about 5 minutes.
He's called the corporal.
And I'm pretty sure the only reason he didn't receive a permanent ban from Disneyland is because he was actively serving at the time. That's my dad's answer.
He thought he was giving us a military order.
Fuck.
I just thought that one was sweet. Also, a disaster not of the dad's making.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, I thought when he got out of the log flume, it was about to turn into a disaster of the dad's making. But
yeah, that one had numerous potential outcomes. Really, lots of alternate universes.
like Splash Mountain, you think you're gonna get it, and then you keep evading danger.
Yeah.
I appreciated that.
So we talked before the call about whether this should be a one or two part parter. I think we're gonna need multiple episodes to get through all the dad content. Let's see. I'm gonna go with from John. When I was a teenager, I watched my dad on his birthday urinate into the neighbor's bushes while repeatedly singing just the motorin' part of Sister Christian and then fall face first into said bushes. Motorin'!
Okay, so here's the thing. I have an MP3 here of what this would sound like, because once upon a time, like 10 years ago on the internet...
This was a thing on college football Twitter for...
This was a thing, and Bubba Prog made us an MP3 of exactly what it would sound like, and I'm just going to play that real quick.
while pissing on a neighbor's shrubbery.
But it's his birthday.
It's his birthday. All crime is legal.
I'd be so proud of my dad.
I would play this song frequently just to fuck with my dad.
Hey, you want to listen to a little music, Dad?
Hey, you gotta go to the bathroom?
This song has been in my music collection because, like, God bless internet legend Bubba Prog, who made this for us like 10 years ago. I had this in my phone for a while, and I would just, at one point I looked up in traffic and realized I had been listening to this file for like 4 minutes, because he made like a 5 minute loop of it. And I've been listening to 4 minutes of it, just like gently nodding my head along without noticing. The rest of the song was not present.
Did you also find yourself absentmindedly peeing on a neighbor's bushes?
No! And I feel like I gotta go back and listen to the whole thing now. Clearly, I'm just not getting into it.
Eventually, it'll take hold on you. And I want to note that this story does not stipulate that after Dad fell first into said bushes, Dad stopped singing Motorin'. Some say he's still singing it to this day.
His spirit still wanders these hills.
Introducing your kids to finances and gift cards can be quite a task. You don't want to limit them with traditional gift cards that only work for one specific store, or give them a credit or debit card and have them run unsupervised. But don't worry, because something epic is here. The Epic Gift Card is a gift card for kids and teens that lets them spend safely and securely. The Epic Gift Card was created with kids and teens in mind, letting them freely use it at virtually any age-appropriate retailer they want. Epic was developed by experts to ensure it's perfect for your kids, giving you relief that it'll be used responsibly while they get to buy exactly what they want. From celebrating their daily victories to preparing them for a future financial responsibility to giving them a fantastic gift, with Epic, the sky's the limit for your kids. Visit epiccard.com today to learn all about this incredible gift card. That's epiccard.com. epiccard.com.